I wanted to direct for a while, but I was just kind of waiting. The right situation hadn't presented itself. And when I read this, I thought it really said something about America and our shared and lived experiences that are presenting themselves right now. And it presented the problem and the solution at the same time. So I thought, okay, this is a story I want to tell.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. That is Gina Gershon, terrific actress and now director. She's directing her first film, 12 Desperate Hours, it's called. And I really enjoyed having a conversation with her. That's her talking about sort of, that when she wanted to really get involved in directing a film and really going for it, really wide ranging conversation. And she's really fun in it too. Talks about acting early on, and she's been in so many amazing movies, Showgirls, Face Off, Killer Joe. So it's a really, really cool conversation with somebody that's got a wide range of talent, that's done a lot of really interesting work in the business. So enjoy that. And before we get to the full interview, I really have a newfound admiration for Domino's. Now they have tater tots that they put like cheese and then more cheese and tomato sauce and toppings on. And I'm just amazed at how they can take something that starts inherently bad for you and make it 1,000 times worse for you in terms of its, health value. Like the brownies covered in chocolate and with caramel whipped cream and motor oil. Like they take every basic food that is inherently just delicious but bad for you and make it 50 times worse. It's just amazing to me. So my hat goes off to Domino's because they don't stop at pizza, people. They are going to kill us one way or the other with the people in their lab they're diabolical. They really are. So I can't wait to see what they come out with next. Maybe marshmallows infused with chocolate and crack. I don't know if anybody does crack anymore, but, crushed oxycodone, whatever. So keep it coming, Domino's. I got to love how you're killing us. All right. Please, by the way, go to Apple, leave a nice review of the podcast, if you don't mind, and tell your friends about the podcast. As always, enjoy Gina Gershon. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week, a terrific, terrific actress and now a director. You know her from films like Showgirls, Bound, Face Off, Killer Joe, House of Versace, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She was great in that. It's Gina Gershon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And you are now doing your directorial debut in a new movie called 12 Desperate Hours on Lifetime. And it's out now. It stars Samantha Mathis, Harrison Thomas, and David Conrad. And this is your first foray into directing. How was it? Did you enjoy it? Was it scary to do it, or how'd it go for you?
Well, I don't think I had time to be scared. It was such a short schedule, 15-day shoot, no overtime, which promptly turned into a 13-day shoot, on a 90-minute piece. So I just had to keep moving forward. I really made sure that I had great actors. I had a no script rule. I learned from William Friedkin on Killer Jokes. We had no time. He's like, no scripts. What's that script doing on? I'm like, hey, no scripts. We literally don't have time. We'll play around within the scene. But, it's just, you have to be really prepared. And that kind of went out the window because I realized I'm very lucky and I've been very blessed working on productions with all sorts of toys and cameras. And my big mistake was assuming that we had all Zoom cameras and jib arms and all that stuff, which, we didn't. So it kind of made me feel like I was back in college going through like guerrilla filmmaking a little bit, taking my phone. I'll get this shot. What do you mean we're closed down? Lightning? Like what is this rule? So I would, luckily iPhones are really great these days. So there's in there, and my VP, he shot a couple things later that, you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, it's amazing that technology now. And let's tell people a little bit about the premise. I mean, it's adapted from Ann Rule's Last Chance, Last Dance crime collection. It's A Mother's Desperate Hours, and it follows a mother who, she she's held hostage with her children. But there's some really interesting, cool twists to this that I, you know, you don't expect.
Right. Well, you know, I'm familiar with Anne Rule's work. I did one of her pieces for Lifetime years ago. She's kind of like the Stephen King of Lifetime, you know, as far as the true crime story. She has a lot of material. And I wanted to direct for a while, but I was just kind of waiting. The right situation hadn't presented itself. And when I read this, I thought it really said something about America and our shared and lived experiences that are presenting themselves right now. And it presented the problem and the solution at the same time. And so I thought, okay, this is a story I want to tell. And, you know, you have this woman who, you know, at first, the first few pages, I'm like, oh my God, she's just a sap. She doesn't stand up for herself. She's so kind that, you know, she doesn't tell the neighbor to fuck off when he's sawing, you know, the saw chainsaws, like waking his kids up at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. You think the husband's cheating on her. She's a really good mom, you could tell. And then all of a sudden this guy shows up with a shotgun in her face and he's obsessively trying to get back to his girlfriend. Clearly he's a little bit unhinged. And because she wants to save her kids and protect her family, she says, I'll take you. I'll take you wherever you want to go. Just leave everyone alone. She gets in the car with him. And, you know, you realize very quickly, there's kind of the polar opposites. You know, here is like good mommy. And he's had none of that. He's had a shitty upbringing, like a dog. No one's really kind to this guy. So he's obsessively trying to get back to this girl, the only love he's known. He's killed a couple people along the way. And I'm not trying to excuse it, but I am trying to understand where he's coming from. You know, like, right. I kind of told it from his point of view and I got inside of his head. And, you know, just from a little bit of kindness and compassion, it kind of becomes her superpower. She prevented this guy from killing other people and from killing himself. And I keep thinking, whoa, is this a fantasy that I'm having? It's like, no, we've just gotten so alienated from each other. And, you know, pandemic didn't help, but there's so many, you know, young guys, old guys, what are people who are depressed and isolated. And it's just too easy to get your hands on guns, you know? Yeah. It's just not a good combination. So I thought this story meant something to me and I could get behind it. And I don't know, it's a true story.
Yeah, it speaks to the mental health sort of crisis going on in the country. And in a way, it was probably always there, but not talked about as much, right? Now, especially among younger people. And then secondly, obviously, you know, this whole thing with guns and, you know, and then you recently had Marjorie Taylor Greene saying, you know, we need a national divorce, you know. you know, I guess that's a way of subtle way of saying maybe we should have a civil war. And, you know, I do think you're right. I think we're disconnected from each other. I think if we talk and tell stories, we connect a little bit more and start to realize kind of we all have more in common than we think, which is cliche, but we're all kind of swimming around in a pile of shit together called life, trying to figure it out. Right.
Listen, it's naive of us to think we do not affect each other. You know, we are all connected, whether we realize it or not, but we are all connected, and how we treat one another affects us for better or worse. You know, you could have, and when you have someone who's just been kicked and kicked and kicked around and no one's kind to him and doesn't understand that and potentially has mental health issues. I mean, the interesting thing about this guy, this took place in the 70s, even though, you know, we hardly had a budget to do the movie. So you couldn't really do 70s, but I was trying to kind of make it feel innocuous. You didn't really know what time it was because it's timeless, even though problem now is, you know, obviously much worse. Gun violence has gone up. I mean, I don't even know what the percentage is, but there's like 40,000 guns per death per year in the United States, something like that. It's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, 3,000 mass shootings since Sandy Hook. It's just out of control. But you know, I think pandemic didn't help. You have these people who are just isolated and out of touch. And, you know, during this time, I was saying in the 70s, when he went to jail, this character, it was either you're either schizophrenic or you're fine. That there was no, you know, the shade of gray weren't in between. So he went to jail for life. And then I think they realized kind of quickly he wasn't completely there. And they just let him out 28 years later. It's like, okay, just let him out. And which doesn't make any sense either. We're just not handling these problems well. Mm-hmm. And I just think people are completely disconnected. And all these kids, I'm just reading so much. You know, of course, everyone's getting depressed, you know, and suicide rates are up. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you know, I was doing an off-Broadway show where I bring people on stage and they tell stories from their lives. It's completely improvised based on what I've been doing as a comedian, but it's not a crowd work show. And the premise of the show is if we talk, we connect, and we realize we have more in common than we think, or maybe we're not so divisive. And it's just people's stories from their lives. It's not politically tied, but I don't think politically, like if you're far right and I'm far left, I'm never going to get you to come to my side of the fence politically. But maybe if we, because we both demonized each other now, right? So, but maybe if we start to see, well, you know, she's not so crazy, you know, she wants to save the planet. Okay, I like guns, but she's got a dog that shits everywhere and so do I. And she's got a kid who's a pain in the ass and so do I. And like, you start to realize if you kind of come together on that level, then maybe you can come together on sort of more, on a more intellectual level on like some big policy things like guns or whatever. And I think that's what's great about this. And it's based, like you said, based on a true story, but like you're touching on things that I think are really relevant right now, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, that's what interested me in it. Listen, I think we have, as you're saying, much more in common than we think. You know, I think it's just the way things are worded. You know, it's not about talking about taking away your freedom. I mean, if you have, you know, gun discipline and safe storage and we have violent history checks in place, like you could have all the guns you want. It's just, it's the person, what we have in common is the person who should not have a gun. They could kill your kid. So you have that in common.
Yeah,
you could all
exactly.
agree that, okay, you could walk around with a gun, right? And now it's, you know, you're allowed. But I think we could all agree like, oh, assault rifles, who should walk around with those? Or like, oh, I have a rocket. No, it's probably not cool that we have rockets.
Yeah, so exactly.
We have to figure out, right? I mean, we do agree. I just think it's the language and everything's gotten so, you know, divisive. I mean, we're split on so many things. And I just think everyone's just gone a little bit crazy and you know, it is about the language and coming together and just putting our arms down and figuring we are connected and we all are affecting. If a bomb goes off, you know, wherever it's going off, it's going to affect us here.
Yeah.
You know, when the water's drying up, it's going to affect you sooner or later. Somehow it all is going to affect you. What's like that? What's that thing called? The butterfly effect? I can't remember what that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And it's foolish of us, naive to not understand that. You know, if you're mean to someone, they're going to turn around and be mean to someone else. If you're kind to someone, maybe you end up saving a life and saving their own life.
Mm.
We just are losing our humanity a little bit, and we have to remember it. We have to go back.
Yeah, well, that's why you know, like works like this are important, because that's kind of what art's supposed to do, is sort of bring us together on some level. And I think that's great that you've been able to tap into this material that this way and kind of imbue it with some of your own point of view.
Well, listen, I at first when Tanya, who I love, Lopez, she's like, you know, you really should be directing something. And I always felt like my first thing directing would be, you know, I'm a little bit like some arty sort of weird, dark, edgy film. And I wasn't sure that, you know, but I think Lifetime is trying to change, you know, and they're really doing a lot darker pieces and a lot more realistic pieces. And I just said, listen, I would like to tell this from his point of view. And she was great. She's like, you do whatever you want. It's a lower budget film. This is your first thing. You'll never get this opportunity to do exactly what you want to do. And did I get to do exactly what I want to do? Not exactly, you know, but I at least got to put, there's little messages throughout the whole thing, if you really watch carefully, that I kind of snuck in there.
That's great. That's what the director does. Did you mention William Friedkin? Did you? I was curious. I always think it's great when actors direct, because I also act, and it's like when you get good direction from a director, it really helps. And when you don't, it doesn't. And So I'm sure you know how to talk to the actors, but just in, there's so much more to directing, obviously, than being on set and directing the actors. But in the overall, were there any directors over the years, you've worked on some amazing projects, directors and or actors that you worked with that sort of you at the time said, I got to remember how he or she does that, or that's a really learning moment for me that you were able to use in directing this, or, you know, in producing. I know you produce also.
You know, I remember being in college and I was studying with David Mamet at NYU. And at the end of, you know, we kind of all went away for the summer and, you know, started Atlantic Theater Company, but, you know, I ended up doing something else. But I remember he was saying to me before I graduated, he's like, you know, you're going to do great, you know, blah, 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 blah. You're good. You have sense of play. Just the only thing I could tell you is to learn how to direct yourself. I went, but he said, if you're lucky, you'll have maybe a handful of directors who will actually direct you. So just go on the set or go wherever you go and learn how to direct yourself. And I thought, oh, that's so cynical. That's just not like, oh my God, I don't believe that. I'm thinking about Elia Kazan. I'm thinking about all these incredible directors. And of course, he's totally right. And I would say in my career, like, you have to take care of your acting. And on the set, especially on a film, they're thinking about so many other things. They're thinking about the shot, what they want to focus on. You know, there's a zillion things to be thinking about. So I learned that early on. And saying that, I feel like I've been lucky because I've gotten a couple incredible directors. I'd say the two best were in theater, though, you know, which is a different medium. I mean, I thought Matthew Watchus and Sam Mendes were like, oh, wow, this is what it's like actually being directed and guided through something. And, you know, because a lot of the times, you know, I've also done a lot of shitty films. So, you know, you learn very quickly as an actor to go, and you just do exactly what you want to do.
Yeah.
Acting 101, as soon as you start, you just say, oh, yes, 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 and you do what you want. And then they're like, fabulous. So,
yes, exactly. You know. Exactly. Well, it's really great to talk to you. I want to have you on again because there's so much more. I want to talk to you about just doing Mamet's work because I've done that before and done it in acting classes and then talk about, so there's so much more. So let's have you back on. But right now, the movie is 12 Desperate Hours on Lifetime. Gina Gershon, the director, terrific actress. Great to have you on and congratulations on the film.
Thank you so much.
All right, there you go. That's Gina Gershon. She's so really, really fun conversation with her. I was really excited to have her on. Hope you enjoyed it. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Please go give us some nice reviews on Apple. And we will see you guys next week. Thanks, everybody.